don't need no education.
Welcome to Education Nation, where we tackle the biggest issues in American education. Your host is the headmaster of Liberty Classical Academy, Rebecca Hagstrom, along with co-host Mark Durkin. School is now in session.
Good morning and welcome back to Education Nation. I'm your host, Rebecca Hagstrom, and it's been a lot of fun to be with all of you on Saturday mornings at KLBB Club, talking about an issue near and dear to my heart, education. In the studio with me again today is my co-host, Pete Hegseth. Pete, how are you this morning?
I'm doing well. Good morning. It's great to be back here. Great way to spend Saturday mornings.
Absolutely.
KLBB, downtown Stillwater, talking a little bit about education
and
the future of our
topic.
Country. And a very important topic. And I will say this, and I'm going to repeat myself from one of our previous episodes because it's worth doing. I really feel no one better than you to be talking about this as someone who stepped out and started a school in Liberty Classical Academy. I mean, Rebecca Hagstrom is an expert on these issues, has lived them, and there's no one better to talk about these issues with than a real practitioner, someone who's not just had to talk about it, but actually do it. So Education Nation, you are in very good hands this morning with our host, and I'm excited about our topics today.
Thank you, Pete. And we are very grateful to have you as well, having a lot of experience in the national realm, being a contributor on Fox News, and just really having an understanding of all the issues nationwide. We're just very grateful to have you as a part of this show.
Appreciate it. It's good to be here.
All right. So we're going to be talking about a pretty controversial topic.
A big
these
topic.
Days. Yes.
Yeah. I mean, we've kind of seen it in the news. I bet a lot of people have seen it in the news. These two words, safe spaces.
Mm-hmm.
Safe spaces in higher education. What does it mean? What are the implications? Where is it happening? Is it happening here? And why does it matter? I mean, I think that's people have heard this in the news, whether it's Fox News or MSNBC or CNN or the local news, conversations about consternation on college campuses and creating these safe spaces. And I think it's a very misunderstood topic.
Generally. Absolutely. I would totally agree with you. And it's really a new topic, really, in just the last year or so. We're really starting to hear a lot more about safe spaces.
We sure are.
And although I think that we were seeing it being launched back in the introduction of American Sniper and how college campuses wanted to introduce that movie and they were getting arguments against it.
So you talked about American Sniper, a popular culture movie that a lot of people are familiar with that triggered a debate on campus.
Right.
But it leads me to wonder, where does that debate come from? You know, I've always thought of higher education as a place for a free flow of ideas, a place where you can explore what's right, what's wrong, what's good, what's evil, what's not. Mm-hmm. And it seems instead we're getting conformity on college campus. It used to be about intellectual diversity, but that gets into dicey topics. How do you, as the headmaster of a school K through 12, how do you handle divergence of opinions when you know, hey, there's maybe something we believe, but people are going to have different thoughts on it?
Yeah. Well, we believe it is really important to have that diversity of opinion. And unfortunately, in our culture today, that isn't something that's valued. We have so much focus on victim mentality and that type of thing that it's really stifling speech. And at our school, we think it's really important to introduce kids to all sides of a topic. Because if we are really going to be an open culture, then we have to be open to viewpoints that are different than our own.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
You know, otherwise we're all going to really conform to one opinion.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And really that's impossible when you think about it. And yet that's what's starting to happen with all these safe spaces. There is this idea that there is only one way to think about any particular topic. And any views that are different than that are not welcome.
Oh, it's so true. I mean, intellectual diversity sort of descends into conformity, into mocking those who don't have a particular perspective.
Mm-hmm.
Where do you think it comes from, though? So to step back even further, why are we at a place where a divergence of opinion, say a traditional opinion, say opinion that was in the mainstream just 20, 30 years ago, not a racist opinion or a sexist opinion or anything like that, just a standard political opinion or a standard religious opinion just 10, 20, 30 years ago, it's no longer tolerated. How does a society get to that point?
I would really argue that it comes from the secularization of our educational system. Our students, really, for the last 50 years, have been educated in a public school system where there is very little introduction of anything having to do with religion or God. If God is even mentioned, he is considered irrelevant to the topic being studied. And so the focus has been on only what you can see, touch, prove, or try to research. And the idea of bringing any type of moral understanding to an argument is not acceptable in a secular education.
Sure.
And so over the course of time, I think that's really shaped the thought processes that have happened in our culture. And they've gotten narrower and narrower and narrower as we've had to kind of keep that whole moral piece out of it.
Absolutely. Don't you think there's so many people that they think of religion, and they think of religion as being narrow-minded.
Mm-hmm.
They think of it as being limiting.
Right.
Right? As opposed to what has been so special about the Western tradition.
Right.
That religion, sort of the nexus of Rome and Jerusalem together, mm-hmm. created this culture where, yes, there's religious belief, mm-hmm. but it's fostered a set of intellectual ideas and reason that is,
yes.
you find the same truth in different
freedom.
Paths.
And freedom. Honestly, it's almost the complete opposite of what our culture has come to associate it with religion today. They see it as being narrow-minded, or, you know, you're bigoted if you have mm-hmm. a view that is consistent with a religious belief. And yet, by incorporating those religious views into the American culture, we actually developed the most free, strong culture that has existed in the course of the world.
No, you're so right. And I think back on the founding tradition.
Yeah.
Every one of the founders, if you look back at their writings, George Washington on down, understood that a moral compass, Christian faith then, but even just a moral compass, was necessary for a civil society,
exactly.
for a free society, that there was a level of self-policing
yes.
that went into your own internal moral
yes.
barometer that allowed a society to exist without overwhelming governmental force.
Right, without rules and regulations.
Yeah, and so you think this is college campuses' attempts to sort of overlay order on a series of individuals that are sort of divorced from that perspective?
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
mm-hmm.
in some ways, it feels like there's that's part of it.
Yes, yes. I really do. I think that really it's just been that this conversation has become so focused on having sort of the right thought, the right mind about a certain topic that there's just no room for disagreement.
How do you find the right mind and the right topic? Besides,
right.
sort of,
who gets to decide what that is, right?
Well, besides believers who, in belief and faith, and you know, Christians follow the Old and New Testament and belief in salvation, and Jews and others
yeah.
will have different views. Our civil society's always been hinged on a belief that we're going to have those differences of
exactly.
opinions and have the ability to voice them adamantly
mm-hmm.
and passionately.
Mm-hmm.
Another example of this, of course, is around marriage
mm-hmm.
and around religious
yes.
liberty and the ability to have an opinion about whether or not you think marriage should be between one man and one woman or one
right.
man and one man. It's
right.
it's no longer about is it allowable under the law? It's now, are you allowed to even voice a dissenting
right.
opinion?
Which then calls into question the whole religious freedom
mm-hmm.
element. And to what degree can Americans practice religious freedom in their everyday personal life anymore, especially as it relates to their careers or
yeah.
to their education, to the
Absolutely.
Way they run their businesses?
This is, you know, all roads lead, as you've been following the political race this year.
Yes.
All roads lead, of course, back to Donald Trump.
Of course.
Right, in this election season.
Yes.
But some people wonder, why do so many evangelicals like Donald Trump? It's an interesting question,
yes,
right? It's
it
because Donald Trump is wages a war on political correctness,
mm-hmm.
which creates a space for evangelicals or those of faith to actually have a opinion
mm-hmm.
about issues like marriage
mm-hmm.
or a life
mm-hmm.
or other. You know what
mm-hmm.
I mean? He's the farthest thing from an evangelical Christian in Iowa.
Absolutely.
Yet he gets
yes.
a lot of support for
yes.
that reason.
Yes, I think you're right about that. It gives people, gives people a voice that they haven't had.
Yeah.
I mean, this has been happening over the course of time, and I think people really are pent up. They're frustrated with the fact that they have to be so careful what they say all the time. And he has kind of wiped that right off the map.
Yeah, they feel like they're living in one giant safe space.
Exactly.
And they look at Missouri or they look at Princeton or they look at Yale, some of these campuses, and they say, wow, it's happening there and it might happen to me. We've got to take a break here, but we're going to come back with some examples of different college campuses and then maybe later in the show how it pertains to Minnesota.
Yes.
Because it isn't just on the East Coast Ivy Leagues.
It it's right here under our noses.
All right, stick around. More Education Nation.
Thank you.
Next.
We don't need no thought control.
We're back. It's just after 10:40 on Saturday morning here in Stillwater, KLBB. We're glad you're joining us on Education Nation. We are in a very safe space. In a warm studio,
especially
on a cold day.
Exactly.
But today's topic, we're talking about safe spaces and specifically on college campuses, intellectual diversity, the exchange of ideas, which is so central to higher education. I'm here. My name is Pete Hegseth. I'm guest hosting along with Rebecca Hagstrom, who is the host of Education Nation and the headmaster of Liberty Classical Academy located in White Bear Lake, a fantastic school that you should definitely check out. My little boys go there, and it's a safe space, but it's not a safe space.
It's a safe space where we have intellectual diversity of opinion.
It's a different kind of safe space. Exactly right. So we're coming back in off this break to talk about some specific examples of how these safe spaces have manifested themselves in higher education. I'm looking at a stack of papers here about a mile long, and you've got 1,000 examples. Well, you know, what are some of the more egregious or more specific examples of college campuses where this is really showing itself?
Yeah. So many come to mind, but one of them that I wanted to highlight is at Brown University. It actually happened last March, 2015, which is before the big Mizzou campus controversy.
Sure.
And there was going to be a woman that was going to bring in a speaker to talk about sexual, let's see what it says. It says, McElroy was going to be speaking on rape culture, and that she was probably going to be not bringing in such a view that is maybe supported by people who would support safe spaces.
Sure.
And so there was a group
The orthodoxy.
Yes.
It was out of line with the orthodoxy of higher education.
And so there were some other students and some task force members that decided that they weren't very happy with this woman coming in. And so they went to the president and they requested a safe space. So it says, they put up advertising that this safe space then would be available for anyone who found this debate. And by the way, it was a debate. Mm-hmm. She wasn't just coming in to speak.
Sure.
Both sides were going to be
fair
shown.
And balanced.
But that was still not going to be okay with this group of students. So they had to advertise a safe space. And it says they wanted to make sure they had this so that there would be students who might find these comments troubling or triggering, a place to recuperate. That's the words. And it says this room was equipped with cookies, coloring books, bubbles, Play-Doh, calming music, pillows, blankets.
Hold on.
This is college students.
Coloring books?
College students, yes. College students.
I have a 5-year-old. I've been doing a lot of coloring recently, but that's the first time I've done coloring.
Pretty shocking, isn't it? And these are supposed to be adults, right? They can go to war. They can vote. Mm-hmm. They can drink, some of them, if they're 21. But this is what they need. And then they interviewed, actually, a woman who, unfortunately, had been a survivor of a sexual assault.
Sure.
Okay? And we know that this is a really difficult thing to go through. But we also know that part of being an adult is going to counseling and getting the help that you need. But a safe space with Play-Doh and coloring books, it's hard to imagine that that could be very helpful. But she said that at one point she went into the lecture hall, but after a while she had to return to the safe space. She said, I was feeling bombarded by a lot of viewpoints that really go against my dearly and closely held beliefs. Mm. And that is the key.
Mm-hmm.
They don't want to hear anything that goes against what they believe.
Sure.
But the problem is, we all have our own beliefs, right?
Yeah.
So how can we possibly have one set of beliefs that everybody is going to agree on?
Sure. Absolutely. And, you know, and in discussing this, of course, both of us understand the contentious and difficult issue that is rape on college campuses. It happens. It shouldn't happen.
Right.
It's terrible. It needs to be addressed.
Exactly.
But there's still multiple sides of this debate.
Exactly.
Of what happens, mm-hmm. why it happens, who's to blame, how it, you know, I mean,
right.
it's never to blame the victim per se, but there's a nuance to the conversation.
Right. There's a big.
And when you're talking about, I'm listening to a debate, I need to flee the scene.
Yeah.
And now I guess in this particular instance, there's some level of, you know, post-traumatic stress that can
right.
go with an incident. Like, I
right.
get it. But there also comes with personal choice of attending an event like
right.
that also, which is
right.
the autonomy and the freedom and the liberty that this country was always
yes.
based on. Hey, if you don't want to hear
yes.
those viewpoints, you don't have to go.
Right.
No one's forcing
right.
you.
And interestingly, our culture has that view on a lot of other things, right?
Hmm.
TV shows, you know, there's always in the past been this history of, well, we don't want to have to censor any books that people read, or we don't want to censor TV shows, or, you know, even pornography to
mm-hmm.
a degree on the internet. And yet, when it comes to something like this on a college campus, an honest intellectual debate, we want to censor it?
I feel like I keep going back to our first segment where you talk about, where does this all come from? And you gave a very clear and strong answer, sort of the secularization of our education
yes.
process. If you've been going through public schools, aka government schools, for
mm-hmm.
the last 10, 20, 30 years, you
right.
have received a purely secular education.
Absolutely.
With very few moral lines being
mm-hmm.
drawn. I'm not even
mm-hmm.
talking about socially conservative lines about marriage
right.
or pro-life or anything.
Right.
Just moral lines around conduct.
Right.
Which means you get to higher education and you're amongst your peers who also went through that education.
Mm-hmm.
And even a lot of the elite private schools have adopted that, you know, middle school and high school have adopted
yes.
that same view. You get
yep.
to college and you're confronted with a religious view or a conservative view.
Mm-hmm.
They react yeah. as if, well, what is this, the 19th century,
right.
the 20th century?
Right.
There's no real dialogue going
right.
on. So a lot of these groups that are pushing back, that are being targeted are Christian groups
mm-hmm.
or
mm-hmm.
conservative groups
mm-hmm.
That are just trying to bring another opinion,
mm-hmm.
which is what I think was happening here
Absolutely.
On campus.
Absolutely. That's exactly right.
Yeah.
yeah. And I think also some of it goes back to the whole victimization philosophy that we've really seen growing in this culture as well. And I believe, again, that comes out of a secular nation. When you don't have a sense of responsibility for your own actions, then the tendency is to blame others when anything goes wrong, and especially when something really is, when you really are wronged by
sure.
something, then even more so you're going to play that victim card. And in some cases, there's some legitimacy to this, and this is what we want to make sure that we help our listeners understand, is that there's always going to be some element of legitimacy
sure.
to some of these things. It's how you handle that. And I do think also that we live in a culture where we have really had a lot of helicopter parenting that's happened in the last 20 or so years. And children have been protected from everything.
Yeah.
You know, bumping a knee even.
Coddled.
You know, yes,
yeah.
yes. There's an article sitting right in front of me, The Coddling of the American Mind. And it's happening very much
yeah.
through this notion.
That's such a good point. It almost feels like the safe spaces, they start at home with a coddled youth that they're sort of shepherded through, and then the education system gets them, and then they get to higher education, and then they're a part of a political discourse. And I'm going to twice in a show today take it back to politics.
Yeah.
But then it does start manifesting itself in our politics, where you have politicians waging class warfare,
mm-hmm.
talking about we'll take from this person and give to that person, and it
yeah.
sounds very attractive in rhetoric.
Right.
Because it's what they've been hearing. It comforts them in their sense of how it all works.
Right.
And it ends in good policy, but it's good politics.
And the adults, college adults, haven't heard and haven't learned enough about all the background with respect to those issues to really even know how to make an informed
sure.
decision about what they're hearing from these politicians.
Well, that's where we hear man
yeah.
on the street interviews at Bernie Sanders rallies asking him about what is socialism, and no one can answer
the question. They can't answer the question because, you know what? They haven't been taught it
yeah.
in schools. Yeah, they absolutely have not been taught it.
No, that's exactly. But they've been affirmed.
Yes.
At every turn, and their self-esteem
yes,
is high.
Yes, yes.
And they've been told that if they have an opinion and it's strong, it must be good. And if someone confronts it, they must be bigoted.
Yes.
Right? I mean,
exactly.
And that's how you get to this point where you get, and we didn't get the chance to get to UC Irvine, Princeton University, my alma mater,
yes, yes.
Missouri. A lot of it ends up manifesting itself in physical altercation,
mm-hmm,
in physical
mm-hmm.
intimidation.
Yes.
And if you have a dissenting opinion, we're not just going to not let you, we're going to shout you down.
Yes.
And then we're going to retreat to our safe space and then tell you that you're illegitimate and try to shut you down. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's, there's a radical nature to how this manifests itself.
There has been a radical nature. And actually, I just read recently that there's, I wish I could remember off the top of my head which college this was at, but there's actually a professor offering a class on in defense of looting. I'm not kidding. Because why? I'm sure as a result of Ferguson and all the places where we're seeing looting, now that's defensible, I guess.
Yeah.
Even as aggressive and devastating as that is to the local economy and to the people who are there. You know, I wanted to share another example with you, Pete. Mm-hmm. You mentioned UC Irvine. Recently, very recently, there's a group of students who are calling for the dismantling of the campus police because they want the entire college campus to be a safe space. So we're no longer limited to a room with Play-Doh and coloring books. Now we have to somehow dismantling the campus police makes it a safe space.
Is it because the police were racist? Is
and
that the
they said there was actually no specific incident that these kids are responding to. They just say that any police system is racist, is aggressive, is violent, is...
It represents the order that they're rebelling against their utopia.
And my first thought was, okay, but what about the girl who might want somebody to kind of walk with them late at night if they're going from the library back to their dorm and they're a little worried about walking alone? Because the other issue that we have on college campuses is all the sexual assaults, right?
Sure.
We hear about this.
Yeah.
So how do we balance those two needs of these students?
It's where reality meets these utopian ideas around human nature, that we've somehow perfected ourselves.
Yes.
And that we don't need police because everyone will just conduct themselves wonderfully until someone has a few too many drinks and makes some bad choice. You know what I mean?
Like,
and then pretty soon you're calling for help and there's no one there because it's the world that we live in.
It doesn't reflect reality.
Yeah.
It is so far from reality. Tell us a little bit about your experience at Princeton years ago and then what you've been hearing recently.
Absolutely. I mean, I graduated in 2003. I was the editor of the conservative publication there. We threw some rhetorical and intellectual bombs, if you will, with our magazine.
Mm, I bet you did.
And there were a lot. It was right after 9/11. There was just a lot going on. And it was contentious. There were some very contentious moments, some meetings that we had with different groups, feminist groups, other groups about different issues.
Uh-huh.
Quite contentious, but always an exchange of ideas. Confrontations, but almost always over op-eds or debates.
Yeah.
I feel like if half of what I had written then was written today, it would have either been banned or we would have been forcibly confronted or not allowed or defunded. I mean, there really is an assault on ideological and diversity, and it ends up being conservatives these days. But people think about it as it's just conservatives versus liberals. This is not about conservatives and liberals. This is about the First Amendment.
Yes, it is.
It's about the nature of our country, a free society and a conversation where campuses are supposed to be that. Because guess what? If you're in a safe space at campus, like I was at Princeton or somewhere else, guess what? You're going to leave that safe space and enter the real world.
Right.
Where there's dollars and cents and winners and losers and profits and losses and bankruptcies and successes and all the difficulties that come with life. And we're just not preparing kids at all for
that. We are not. And if they think they're going to be able to get their little safe space at their workplace, unfortunately mistaken.
You're going to move into a neighborhood and you're going to move next to a guy or a gal who's got a very different viewpoint next door neighbor. Are you going to be able to talk to them about their viewpoint, or are you going to shout them down or not interact with them? It really is a societal problem.
It is, and that's what made this country so great, was to come together, coalesce around some common values that were very much open to other viewpoints.
Absolutely. No, it's so true. And I think sometimes here in Minnesota, we think we're immune to it. We don't have a whole lot of time for our last segment. We're going to take a quick break here. We're going to come back and talk about how this issue affects Minnesota, because it's not just Princeton, UC Irvine on the West Coast, and Brown. It's right here in Minnesota as well. We'll talk about it briefly. We'll be right back.
Yeah.
We don't need no education.
Well, welcome back to Education Nation with Rebecca Hagstrom and Pete Hegseth. Hey, Pete, we were talking a little before the break about some examples that were nationwide with respect to this whole safe space movement. And before we move on to what we're hearing locally, I'd like to just share a quote that I think demonstrates the fact that this is not just a conservative issue or a religious issue. This is a quote by a professor who didn't even want to give his name name. Hmm. He protected himself with a pseudonym and wrote an essay that describes how gingerly he now has to teach. And his quote is, "I am a liberal professor, and my liberal students terrify me." Can you believe that?
Well, talk about it's coming back to bite him. I mean, there's just the orthodoxy of you will conform to one viewpoint. He's apparently not conforming enough.
Enough. He's not enough.
Viewpoint.
Exactly.
But think about him having to go to the anonymous perspective. Same thing happened at Princeton. Kids went to an app called Yik Yak, where you could apparently make anonymous comments to push back on the Black Lives Matter movement, which they had seen as very aggressive.
Okay.
They had to do it anonymously. And that's what happens. And that's a manifestation of a lack of tolerance.
Yes,
of different
it
views.
Is.
But
it
it's
is.
Not just, we wanted to come back to some Minnesota examples. You have a powerful example from the University of Minnesota.
Yes, yes. Earlier this fall, the student government, somebody mentioned that they are nominated that they would like to offer a moment of silence in honor of the victims of 9/11 and have some type of a memorial to recognize.
Sure.
And they ended up coming, or there ended up being a group of people on this same student government who said, no, we can't do that. That would be what's the word I'm looking
make
for?
Make someone uncomfortable.
Yeah,
or
make
intolerant.
Exactly. It would make Muslims who are peace loving uncomfortable, and it would make radical Muslims look bad. And we just can't do that. We have to really be careful that we protect the Muslim student population. Now, again, I know that there's a lot of peace loving Muslims out there, but we had over 2,000 people. 2,000 Americans die on 9/11 at the hands of radical Muslims. And how can we honor their families if we don't take the time to memorialize and remember them? And in the next meeting, or maybe 2 months later, they did reverse their decision.
Mm-hmm.
But they did. They had decided, nope, we can't do this. Mm. We can't go ahead with this memorial. And then luckily, there was an outcry again on the other side, and they did reverse their decision.
Something that feels so clear-cut as 9/11, right?
I know.
I mean, it's,
would you have ever thought?
And you'd think, and you would think you'd want distinctions drawn there, right? And I can't get in the head of a moderate Muslim. I'm not one. I've spent a lot of time with Muslims in the Middle East and elsewhere. But wouldn't they want to say, hey, that's not us.
Right.
This is a radical ideology.
Right.
Don't lump us in. Of course we'll memorialize 9/11 and disparage those who did that terrible act.
Exactly.
Those are the moral distinctions that are tricky.
Yeah.
But we should be able to draw them
yes,
in our society.
Yes, yes.
There, you said there was another example. We're on the serious topics of 9/11, which is a huge example, obviously,
yeah.
and
mm-hmm.
hits us at home.
Mm-hmm.
But it's even getting into the realm of sports. It's an example I wanted to pull
yes.
up briefly from
yes.
the Wisconsin, our next door neighbor here.
Right.
Their high school association is banning specific cheers at high school games. And as a high school basketball player myself, I loved it when they would chant airball or scoreboard. Exactly. I mean, you don't want to be in the other end of that. But apparently that was too offensive for the players.
Because these little children are just so sensitive. They're just like little fluff, butterflies.
And you know what? Kids are sensitive. But how do you learn?
Right.
If you don't confront that sensitivity and build resolve and know how to push through it, I just don't understand. And yes, we should be policing up, racist things said from the stands or bigoted things said from the stands. We can handle that.
That's,
no one's
but that's
talking
not
about
what
that.
Was outlawed.
No, we're talking about really straightforward.
These are really
athletic
straightforward chants. And none of them on the list. I wish I could remember what all of them were. Airball was one.
It was basic stuff.
It was very basic.
It was scoreboard, like when you point to the scoreboard at the end of a game.
I mean, really. Or now, fundamentals. Fundamentals is another one.
Now, we're getting the scoreboard pointed at us because the show is wrapping up. But I will say, we said we do every week, we're tackling tough issues like safe spaces.
Yes.
Rebecca Hagstrom, you've got such a powerful voice on this. Again, it's Liberty Classical Academy, where she is the headmaster, where they tackle these issues every single day.
We do, and we welcome the kids to discuss and debate from all angles. And we really believe that the best way to make this nation strong is to provide the various viewpoints, and also to help the kids learn that, they need to be tough. We've got to be tough.
Absolutely.
Out there.
It's a beautiful thing.
All right, ladies
and gentlemen, Education Nation.
Thank you so much, Pete. And we look forward to seeing all of our, hearing all, or joining all of our listeners again next week as we continue our conversation about education in America today with a look at the decline of Western civilization in our classrooms.
Looking forward to it.
Thank you.